This episode of the Bayou Dragons podcast is proudly brought to you by Dragon Industrial Wrap.
Fuse. Ready for any project, no matter how big or how small. Dragon Industrial Wrap.
And we're live. Episode 57 of the Bayou Dragons podcast. Me, Mitch, Ryan Warhola are welcoming some very special guest. One of the biggest outdoor influencers in the podcast game. Just an all-around great guy.
What a sales pitch.
Well, one of the greatest without tits.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I was about to go on a real rant. You really just kind of cut me. I was about to be like just really just trying to.
I'd have so much money if I had a nice set of jokes.
Oh, man.
Oh, no
Could
doubt.
Could you imagine?
Yeah. There's no doubt.
I own the world.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. No doubt. 100%.
I know how to use them, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do what I want. Yeah.
Yep.
Everything. I mean, this is like every single girl down in Venice, Louisiana that, you know,
oh, yeah.
Offshore fishing.
We can go down the names. Yeah. We won't do that, though.
No,
we'll continue on. So introduce him.
Anyway, we're here with Cable Smith, the owner and producer and main man of the Lone Star Outdoor
Show.
Yeah. Like,
it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem, buddy. I'm glad that you decided to, you know, you'd agree to do this with us.
Of course. Flattered by the opportunity.
No, so Ryan's been telling me, I mean, I've been seeing your stuff, you know, online. You're huge on social media and everything like that. But Ryan's had nothing but good things to say about you since, you know, I guess y'all have been acquainted and everything. So
yeah, we've been friends for a couple of years.
Yeah.
We've done a little bit of international hunting together and have two more international trips planned in the very near future. So, yeah, I'm proud to call Ryan a good friend.
Yeah, Cable's the reason I spend a lot of money in Africa now.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
I've talked about it before, Ryan.
Wait, you're welcome, Carl.
Yeah, Carl.
It literally, Ryan told me, did you go with him on Ryan's first trip?
Yeah, so.
Okay, you're the main reason, because Ryan told me before he went, he goes, it's like, Africa, man, it's one of those things. I'm going to go once. I'm going to shoot my animals. I'm not going back. And I was like, yeah, I feel you. Like, I kind of had the same. I haven't done it. So you kind of have that deal. Like, you want to go do it. And then, you know, we did a whole podcast episode of
I think he's Ryan. Putting the deposit on trip number three tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Well, when he got home, he goes, I'm going back in September.
No, he was like a crackhead. He's like, I gotta go back. I gotta go back.
Yeah, 6 months. It took me 6 months.
He couldn't wait. I was going back the next summer. He was like, I can't wait that long. I gotta go now. I gotta go.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And he shot a Cape Buffalo. It was next time.
That was awesome. That was great.
I can definitely see why he was showing us some of the footage earlier. That's unreal.
Yeah, he shot a Cape from like 55 yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 35 yards. 35 snuck in yards. On him. Snuck him on in his bed. 35
what,
yards.
What all did you, and I know this is more of a, you know, the Cable podcast, like where's, but I haven't got to really talk to you about everything you've shot last time you went to Africa. And you've been on a podcast since then.
Yeah, no. So I brought my bow this time. Which is a Cable move. I figured I saw him bring it the first time. I'm going to bring it the second time. So it's one of those deals that rode in the truck a lot, and we didn't really break it out unless there was an opportunity. But we were Cape Buffalo hunting hard, me and Martin. And then we're on day two, and nothing's dead yet. And I'm starting to get a little nervous, you know. Like, there's usually blood, like, within the first 4 or 5 hours of hunting in Africa. And wind was blowing. When I went, it was in February, so it was the – coming into the fall, it was still warm, and we ended up stumbling across a black impala and snuck in there and shot him at 45 yards with a bow, and that kind of broke the ice. And then a little bit later, we got in a stare off at about 20 yards with my Cape Buffalo that I ended up shooting. We saw him in here in this little valley that he was in, and we were told by another PH that he was kind of working his way up the valley. We literally must have walked within 10 yards of him at one point in the brush and never knew he was there. And then as we were coming out, we just meet each other at this point of brush, and it's like, oh, shit. And he's sitting there staring, blowing, got it all on video, and takes off. And Martin's like, man, that's an epic experience right there for you to see that. And the next morning, we were like, okay, we're going to find him. So we did like every Western big game hunter. We just got up high and like glassed down into this valley. And Martin and I must have seen him at the same time because we both come over binoculars. And he goes, Cape Buffalo, huh? I was like, yeah, he's right there. And he goes, yeah, that's him. I saw him too. So we put the sneak on him, and he was in his bed when we shot him, but it was an epic hunt. It was the same one because he had a big scar down his side. And when he was laying in the video, you'll see this big scar down his side. And so we knew exactly it's the same one. And I'm sure they're going to put in the video when they edit it, the standoff the night before and then the shooting, you'll be able to see that it's, you know.
Hell yeah.
So it was really cool. And then after the Cape Buffalo, I shot a red heart of beast. And then we changed camps. I shot a white blessed buck. I had a little mishap with a Impala, a big Impala Ram, regular, you know, color phase red Impala. I don't know what happened. Watching the video, it came off my bow wrong there. I don't know if I hit something along the way or what, but it just kind of like barely got him. But so that was a mishap there.
Are you hunting with the best bow hunter?
Yeah,
on the Eastern Cape.
Oh yeah, he's great.
When I take my bow, Carl's like, "Damn it, we're playing Indian today." Yeah.
No, Martin eats it.
Let's go
it
back
up
to playing cowboys. Get your rifle. He doesn't like it.
Yeah, Martin eats it up, man. He's so like he would tell me, "Hey, get your bow, on things." I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, we go try it with the bow." I did shoot a sable, 73 yards with my bow.
That was a cool video.
Yeah,
that's a poke too.
Yeah, so we actually had some history at the sable my first afternoon, or I said first midday before Lee fed us lunch, which is another topic that you could talk for hours on is the food there. But we saw this sable snuck in at like 30 yards and wind swirled, hit it. I mean, just he smelled, just got out of there. Went in again, same thing. Well, this time he stopped at 73 broadside. March goes 73. I turned my dial on my sight to 73, drew back, and I was like, "You want me to shoot?" And in the video here, him go, "If you're comfortable," and you're, and just, I mean, it's just beautiful. And I wouldn't have took the shot if I wasn't like anchored and feel good. And I do shoot pretty far. I shoot out to 80 quite often on my bow because I do a lot of like North Dakota with Colby and everything hunting. Yeah. So we shot that. That was really cool. And then I shot a kudu that was world class. That was really epic. And then I finished my hunt up with a Gemsbok. So.
Hell yeah.
It was a fun time. It was fun. It was interesting to be by myself. It's kind of weird, though. Like, I showed up in camp and knew people in South Africa. You know, like, mm-hmm. I just showed up in camp and I was like, "I know you." You know, like, we all of a sudden it just showed up like I was with friends. So.
Hell yeah.
Pretty cool.
And you and Martin are friends. I mean, he came here and
hung. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
to Texas and shot his first deer with a bow last year.
Yeah, he shot two.
Fredericksburg?
Yeah, he came to Fredericksburg. Martz borrowed my bow because he didn't want to travel with his. And because Ed came to the U.S. like slightly before Martin did, and his bow got lost. So Martz was like freaked out about it. I was like, shoot mine. And he shot my bow, didn't touch sights, didn't move nothing, and he killed two nice whitetail bucks. He actually killed a buck. That I had personally been hunting myself for like 3 years, just the old rundown. I think it was like 8 years. I mean, there's no teeth. He might have been older and old, just rundown 8-point, and Martin killed him. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And Cable, you've, from what I know, you've done multiple tours to Africa.
Seven.
That is.
And we're about to go on 8 in 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm only going to go once. And I said the same thing.
You said the same one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said that. I did. It was a lie.
How many countries have you hunted in?
South Africa, Argentina, which you're going to Argentina.
Yeah.
Bird hunting?
No. You go to Argentina to hunt red stag. That's a really big misconception. Like,
yeah.
You can go there and shoot dove until your arm falls off. But you go there for red stag, water buffalo. You think we have nice black buck in Texas. You haven't seen anything until you go to Argentina and hunt free-range black buck. Herds of hundreds. Our buddies, we call them our Mexicans. They call themselves that, actually. Yeah. And they're proud of it because they're like, Mexicans can get things done. But our buddies Arturo and Daniel, they were like, they were obsessed with this idea of going to this other ranch. It was the only trip that anyone made from the main lodge we were at because they had a ton of game there. And like, no, we want to go to this other place and we want to hunt these black buck that we've seen. And they went and, dude, now everyone wants to go there.
Yeah.
It was, there's like herds of 400 black buck, and it was just like,
wow.
Finding the biggest of the biggest ram was the main problem. Because there's so many.
Hell yeah.
Let's see. I've been to Canada quite a few times for moose, bear, shot maybe three or four bear there, going back to shoot another moose in Newfoundland. And they get pissed. If you don't say Newfoundland, they get real mad. It's Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
They'll correct you. And Mexico quite a few times. So that's about it. I'd like to do Australia is really appealing to me.
Yeah. I was going to say, have you done Australia or New Zealand?
Mm, no. No. Well, I wanted to hunt red stag free range, and that's why I didn't go to New Zealand. Because, and there are free range red stag there, but from the experience that I wanted, Argentina was the best. And I vetted every outfitter at the SCI show. There was like probably 15. Found the one that I thought would give us the best opportunity at really nice stag free range and booked with them. And it was a great choice. And going back again and have made new friends there and taking old friends back with me. So
yeah, I'm so looking forward to that trip. And I hate I had to sit out. I actually put a deposit down, and Daniel, our Mexican buddy, as we call him, took my deposit because I just work dragging all this stuff going on. It's bad timing. So
I've also done some mission trips in Brazil when I was younger. And so it wasn't like a hunting trip, but peacock bass fishing catching caiman alligator, little ones. I didn't stick my hand down there. Yeah. Like, we're going to check our gator lines tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's going to be some big sons of guns on there, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
These were little ones. Although it was kind of like baptism by fire. So we went there for mission work, and I basically played soccer and did like a fishing mission is what I called it, and gave out lures and soccer balls. And so in return, one of the elders from the village paddled up to our houseboat at, it was dark, and through a translator was like, I want that guy to come with me in my dugout canoe, and I want to take him gigging. Mm-hmm. He wanted to take me gigging. Okay, so we go, and like he starts gigging fish, and every one of them was like, pretty sure I have that in my aquarium back home. Yeah. You know, it was like a Plecostomus and an Oscar, and you know, it was like one after the next. And then all of a sudden, I'm not really paying attention, and then there's a 4-foot caiman in the bottom of the dugout canoe, and I'm like, oh my god! And it doesn't have its mouth taped shut. And then all of a sudden, he grabs a metal chain and chains it up, and there's dinner for the next week.
Beautiful,
you know?
Yeah, beautiful.
Heck yeah,
piranhas, yeah, all kinds of crazy stuff.
But yeah, you talk about Argentina with the black buck. I mean, when Argentina comes up, it's always been talked about as dove or waterfowl. Yeah. I've never heard anyone hunting black buck over there.
Yeah.
I guess kind of like a hidden gem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I shot one dove, one red stag, and one water buffalo. So I did get a dove.
Yeah. That probably wouldn't have been too hard.
We did. They had like a drought where we were. And so it's not an area where you go for the volume dove hunts anyway. Yeah. Wasn't Cordoba. And they tell you that. They're not trying to hide it, but they're like, some years the dove's good, and you might, they were like, you might shoot 200. I'm like, well, shoot, that sounds nice. But they're like, it's a drought. So we did a day of perdiz, which is just like pheasant or like a quail native species there.
Did Daniel do that with you?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Daniel's so ate up with the bird hunt. I need to get him to come down here and bird hunt.
Oh, my God.
Daniel and I had one of the most interesting days in Africa that I've ever experienced. And we went into the mountains, and you think about Africa and you're like, big game, right? Well, we went into the mountains and had some, they were Irish setters. The guy had like 6 or 7 like well-trained Irish setters, and we hunted gray-wing partridge, and we shot, we shot a mess of them. It was awesome. And then we did our first waterfowl hunt in Africa, and you can bait there, and people are like, oh, you're baiting ducks. Well, nobody hunts ducks over there.
Yeah.
So you're like, it's insignificant. If you go and shoot 30 or 40 or 50 or 100, it's, you know, we all like duck hunting. We'll probably go 10, 20 times this season, and maybe we shoot our limit. Okay, that adds up to one hunt over there, but you're only going one time, and the South Africans don't duck hunt.
Yeah.
They could care less.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
That's very interesting.
It's not a part of their culture at all.
How was the peacock bass fishing? Because me and Ryan were supposed to do that a few years back.
It was embarrassing for me because I have a rod and reel, and that guy in the dugout canoe the next day, he's like, hey, come on, we're going fishing. And he has some fishing line wrapped around one of these.
Yeah.
Hand, you know, reel it in, and he caught like 4, and I caught 0. So
we had a trip booked in 7 days.
7 days.
7 days, mothership, Amazon, awesome trip booked, and COVID hit.
Mm. And then the year after COVID, Imelda hit.
Imelda hit, yeah.
So, like,
Porter had 5 foot of water in his house.
Yeah. So, like, we had a twice, you know, I didn't get my money back on that one.
Jeez.
Yeah, me either.
I don't think Ryan did. I think only half the people did, but I still, that's one of my things.
I'd love to go do that, yeah. I want to do that, and I want to go to Australia and go out of Cairns and 1,000-pound black marlin. Yeah.
My dad has gone back to Brazil. I think I went 3 or 4 times on those mission trips. And through the same organization, it's called Amazon Outreach. It's like a Presbyterian entity. And they do amazing work. But my dad, I didn't grow up hunting. I grew up bass fishing. He's obsessed with bass fishing to this day. And he went back for a fishing mission. And he went back 3 times on that fishing mission. And all they did, I mean, they did drill a couple wells and did some, you know, philanthropy. But mostly the guys were going to go peacock bass fishing. And he caught like a 17-pounder. Awesome. I think that was his biggest, but yeah.
They get so big, man.
I didn't know they got that big.
No, yeah, that's why you go there. Like, you can go catch a peacock in, like, Florida, but you're going to catch, like, a 2 or 3 pounders. Like,
yeah, that's what really, I've seen.
No, that's North America. You go down South America and the Central
America.
And
they got several different species of peacock, right? They
And one of the coolest, like, geographical things I've ever seen was in Brazil. So you have the Amazon River and then the Rio Negro, another massive river. Where they converge, like you can see this, the Amazon water is a totally different color. And here's the Rio Negro, which is very dark. And it's like these, it's like, you know, if you put oil and water together.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Man.
So, Cable, just we kind of passed up the whole thing. What, like, could you tell our, you know, listeners what you do? I mean, like, you're, about your podcast, about, you know, we kind of just jumped into straight hunting stories, but...
Well, that's the good stuff. Yeah. No, but we can talk about the boring stuff now. So, yeah, I got a degree in radio, TV, film from North Texas. And I started out at Baylor doing business, and I was like, I don't see myself wearing a shirt and tie for the rest of my life. Like, I don't want to do this. And I always liked sports talk radio. I was obsessed with it in high school, and I was like, I feel like that's what I want to do. So then I transferred to North Texas.
Green.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I don't claim, claim Baylor. I went to Baylor for 3 years. Yeah. I had a very illustrious college career. So I went to North Texas and got a degree in radio, TV, film, and then was dating my wife and we got engaged. And I took my first job in radio in Texarkana, Texas. And my boss was like, and I was doing what I wanted to do. Sport. I had my own sports talk show and was doing the news. And he was like, you have to host a weekly hunting and fishing talk show for these East Texas rednecks. Was like, the Piney Woods Outdoor Show is what it was called. And I just fell in love with it. And the economy went in the crapper in 2008 when Obama, I'm not saying it's Obama's fault, but that's when it happened. And I got laid off. We moved back to North Texas. My wife's a nurse, so she still kept her job, and we were fine. But I started the Lone Star Outdoor Show on my in-law's dining room table in 2009. And it was through, we have all this nice equipment here. I had a telephone, like a landline, and I recorded every interview through a landline. And the sound quality, if you were to go back and look at those first, or listen to those first episodes, is just complete garbage. Like, I can't believe people listen to that. But that was, like, the norm back then.
Well, yeah, like, you're one of the, if you're doing it in 2009, podcasting wasn't really a thing.
I didn't even know what it was. I just said, here's, so you could listen to the radio show on the weekend, and then I would slap it up on iTunes, be like, hey, if you missed it, listen to it on iTunes. That's how I described it. Listen to the radio show on iTunes. I didn't even know what podcast was, like. The word Joe Rogan kind of made it famous a couple years later.
The first time I ever talked to Cable was he reached out to me on, I think, Instagram or maybe Facebook, and was talking about Snapper and asked me to call in on my cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
I called in and did an interview with him. Yeah. And that was, I don't even know when that was.
Well, it's because I was following your page and seeing all these fish that you were catching.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, this guy seems like a cool dude.
Yeah.
He's always on the Snapper. So
yeah, I don't even remember when that was. That was a long time ago. Long time ago.
We'll have to pull that back up.
Yeah,
and listen.
I have to go.
Yeah,
that's way back.
Buyer beware on the sound quality.
Yeah. I might when we do this podcast, I might try to find like what episode that was and post like just the right here.
Yeah.
Episode 8. Because how many episodes are you at? Like, I mean, it's hard to remember.
I think
that.
Before I came here this morning, I finished editing 745. And then I got into a situation a couple years ago where I just had more content than I could fit into a weekly show. So I started doing these things. I just call them campfire conversations. And there's because it's a radio show, there's commercial breaks. It's not typical podcast format. But those campfire conversations, they're sponsor free. There's no commercials. You know, it's like traditional podcast form. So I think I have about 60 something of those. So like somewhere around 800 something episodes.
Man, that's a lot. This is number 57 for us. And I feel like, you know, we've been pretty consistent, but that's gonna be if we keep doing it till then, dude. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah,
800 shows.
I don't feel like I've ever really worked a day. You know, the editing is tedious. That's probably the biggest time commitment from my job. And I don't. It's just me, so I do it all and do, you know, recruit the advertising. And dude, when I started out, I would call Jim Bob's Fishing Guide Service on Lake Texoma and be like, will you give me $200 to make you a commercial and run it for 3 months? Because I'm buying the airtime from the radio stations and then trying to make a living like selling it to sponsors.
Yeah.
So Jim Bob would say, yeah, sure, you know, and maybe Jim Bob would send the $200. Maybe he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't turn away a dime back then. I wouldn't make a commercial for $200 today. Yeah.
Like, and now you're sponsored by some big names.
Well, and I've gone from having like 25, 30, 40, $200 sponsors to like 10 or 15, like that make a bigger financial commitment. And
yeah,
that's a lot easier for me. And I'm, you know, thank God for every one of those sponsors. They are the ones that, you know, afford me to get to call this a job.
Yeah.
Which I never sought out to do because I thought I was going to be doing sports talk radio.
Yeah. So who's your longest reigning sponsor so far?
Been working with Mossberg a long time. I've been working with Kent Cartridge, maybe a decade. Mossberg, probably a decade. See, Stealth Cam, been working with them for maybe a dozen years.
Wow.
COVID was really good for me business wise. So many people were hunting.
Hunting, fishing.
There was
this
influx of cash into the industry. That was like the best that I ever had. And some of those sponsors since then have dropped off. And, but the, like 21, 22, I think were the best years I've ever had, like from a business standpoint.
Yeah. That's what we, it sucked economically, like for the economy, but like the Bayou Dragons, we actually, like it helped us because we kind of, you know, that's when we like LLC'd the name and got the business going. And then COVID hit and we're like, everybody's like, oh man, this is about to be bad. And then it, boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. Well, and I actually met Mitch at a Texas Trophy Hunters extravaganza. They've advertised with, speaking of long-term partners, they've advertised with me probably 12 years out of the 15 I've been doing this. And then they were bought by SCI.
Yeah, I was about to say, SCI is one.
They're my title sponsor and have been for, I think, 5 years now.
Yeah.
Trophy Hunters has been very good to me.
Yeah.
We like the people over there.
Mm-hmm.
They, it's always a good time. The marketing or the, you know,
networking, more
the networking, the networking that we do there is better for us than like the sales. Like I was telling you, we got to go on like a thermal hunt and do all this stuff. Like we meet somebody, like we met Hunt Hoot Camo through the Trophy Hunters.
Do you know Robson?
Do I know Robson?
Okay. So I was telling you, like my son is in the back room. He's probably playing on his iPad. But Henry, I took him out of school to come do this. Most kids, their parents were like, well, take him out on the weekend, right?
Yeah.
And I told Ryan, I was like, can it be a weekday? Because Henry has soccer games on the weekend. I've taken him out of school.
It's way more important than school.
To go hunting, you know? And I told his soccer coach, I was like, and he plays club soccer. I was like, hey, Henry's not going to be here at practice on Wednesday, but I just want you to know why. Mm-hmm. You know, he's missing school to come do this, but he's coming back for the games.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, as long as it's, you know, he's back for the games, you know. But yeah, I think he sometimes should probably pinch himself from some of those. He's going to Africa this summer. And I don't think a lot of kids get to.
No.
And it's just, I mean, just chance because of what dad fell into for a living.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I'm glad he's here, and he just gave me a hug and told me, thanks for bringing me.
You know Robson?
Yeah, oh, back to Robson. Yeah. So we were talking about soccer, right? That's where, so I played soccer with Robson on Monday nights. Oh yeah, yeah. We're good friends.
Oh, wow.
We played, and he's hurt, like, and he's younger than me, so he has no excuse, but, and I've been on IR for like 6 months dealing with like some hernias I had to have surgery to repair, but we've played a lot of soccer and drank a lot of beers afterwards. Monday nights over 30 league. And it's serious business. I mean, that's why we're always hurt. And we keep getting older, and the league keeps getting younger and more Hispanic. And we're like, all right, guys, when do we go to the over 40 league? Why are we doing this to ourselves, you know?
Yeah, we're working on some stuff with I talked to Robson a lot.
Yeah.
Good friend of ours.
They've hooked me up.
He's a good dude. And Casey also. Casey, do you know Casey? Casey also played soccer with us.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But Casey.
I met Casey for the first time actually at Fort Worth.
Casey just helped me with some t-shirt design stuff. And sorry, Casey, but he was on the team for a while, but he kept getting red cards. And he finally just said, I'm too much of a hothead to do this. But you wouldn't think that, like, just talking to him in normal everyday life. It's like when he gets on the soccer field.
He flips a switch.
Oh, competition. Dude, I've seen him getting fights. Yeah,
people change their,
I know mostly Robson, Steven, and Cocaine. Cocaine Rob.
Okay.
Or not Cocaine Rob. Cocaine, why am I blank right now?
I don't know any of the cocaine.
His dad.
Rhetoric.
Oh, his dad.
Dad. Oh, okay. Steven's dad. Mm. The original Hunt Hoot.
Okay. No, I've met him too. Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys have hooked me up with a bunch of stuff via through y'all. Like,
yeah, no, they're
like,
great.
I said I was going to Africa and like, oh, we're going to send you a care package. And they sent me like 7 pairs of pants and a whole like.
Nice.
Yeah. Like top and bottom, like down suit and everything. I'm like, wow. Okay. Cool.
No, they're legit.
Yeah, they're super nice guys.
They hooked us up when I really gained a lot of respect for the guys. And I met them. They were great people. First year we met them. When we went up north to hunt, they said, oh, y'all are up north. Let me send y'all some stuff. We were up there, and they overnighted. There was like 5 or 6 of us.
Six suits to Montana.
Six, like, wow. Jackets and pants for everybody,
honey. Yeah.
And we all wore them, and they were great. And I was like, these guys are awesome.
Is that the Bayahu or Bahu? Something like that, yeah.
Bahu. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't know how to pronounce it either. It's spelled weird, but yeah, that's the suit they gave me.
They probably pronounce it Boohoo.
It's super, super warm, like super warm.
I enjoyed
the jacket's awesome, and I wear it quite a bit, duck hunting.
That is the one thing where I have run through sponsors is apparel.
Apparel, yeah.
I started with Game Guard,
yeah,
and wore that for 3 or 4 years, and it was cool. And then I went to Scent Blocker, and then they got sued by Scentlock and ended up like going bankrupt. And then I was with First Light for 3 or 4 years. And I knew once Meat Eater bought First Light that was probably the beginning of the end for me. Cause like fundamentally we just, it's not a good fit.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot more to that story, but I don't want to go into it. But then I ended up with Numa and was with them for 3 years. And you've worn Numa stuff and I love it. But I don't think that company was ran very, very poorly to say the least. You need to hire people that actually hunt to run your marketing. And it's not, I'm not crying over spilled milk. I told this to them for the 3 years I was with them. And then, so no wonder they didn't have any, they don't pay any, influencers at all anymore.
Yeah.
And so that had ended. And then like 3 weeks ago, my buddy Will, who was at Numa when I would like sign on with Numa, and then they kind of ran him off, unfortunately, because he was great. He's like, are you still with Numa? And I was like, funny story, no. And he's like, great, Muddy's launching our outdoor apparel in 2 weeks and you're on. And I was like, sign me up, you know?
Yeah,
like,
perfect.
And I don't do this. I don't like jumping from brand to brand in the same category. I really don't. I like brand loyalty to me, and I want to be loyal to you. But that's the one that's just like this burn my saddle. So I hope the Muddy thing is a long-term fit.
So I really respect the, you know, not wanting to jump from brand to brand. We have a few, I guess you can say sponsors, just people that we represent that, you know, there's a few brands that we've you know, when they started out, we worked with them, like Canvasback Waterfowl with the waders and stuff like that. And we've had offers to do other wader stuff, but it's like, look, until they tell us, you know, that they don't want us to, you know, represent them anymore, then we won't do that. Like the boots, like we use Wingman Waterfowl, like the Huck boot, you know, right. the ankle boots. We use Wingman Waterfowl and really like their stuff.
Yeah.
And they're very grateful for us, you know, sponsoring them.
And it's great that you guys are loyal to them. And I've had other companies come and say, we'll offer you more. And I'm like, no, been with this company for, All Seasons Feeders.
Mm-hmm.
They might be the longest run. They probably are. Yeah. I think I've been with them not since day one, but maybe like 13 or 14 years.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And,
it's hard to beat All Seasons Feeders though. Really and truly. I mean, they have everything.
I had, I went on this elk hunt, last week, and I have this silverback. They call it the silverback, and it's this aluminum cargo carrier, you know, trailer hitch thing.
Yeah.
And I've had so many people be like, dude, that is the beefiest. And it's aluminum. It's never going to rust.
Yeah.
500 pounds you can put on there. And it's like every time you're rolling down the road, it's like advertising. And I don't even think about it. I'm like, I just knew I had a crappy Cabela's one that you could put like one cooler on and you were done. Now I have this giant thing. You can put a deer on it and a big, big Yeti or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. They, when they came out with the, grills,
mm-hmm.
They're so nice.
Oh yeah.
They're so hard to, I mean, like I have one at the ranch in Fredericksburg and, you'll see it. I mean, I stopped by, Las Casadoras and it's like, I need a new grill. And I was like, oh shit, All Seasons has one.
The
check
best.
It out. I was like, man, this is
family
awesome.
Owned. I work with the son and daughter, mm-hmm. Zach and Lindsay, but their dad started it in South Texas. Like just out of trying to, you know, come up with a better, a better solution to anyone that's hunted South Texas knows. Like, and I always laugh at these Western people that think they can just come to Texas with their bow and spot and stalk a deer in the South Texas brush. Hey. If you don't cut a Sendero or have a pipeline and then put a feeder there, you ain't spotting and stalking anything with a bow in South Texas ever.
Nothing.
Come. I welcome you.
Well, come with it. Yeah, that's it.
They want to judge us for it. I'm just like, listen, I'll come play in your sandbox any day. Sometimes I strike out. Sometimes I, you know, kill an elk or a mule deer or a pronghorn or whatever. But I'd like to see you come here and do this. You talk a big game.
Exactly.
And judge us for feeding. Or you go to the, have you ever hunted whitetails in the Midwest over manipulated agriculture?
Yeah, giant-ass cornfield. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the I've soybean. Hunted in Pike County, and the outfitter buys X bushels from the farmer, and then periodically throughout the season, he goes in there and cuts them. And then I'm sitting in a box blind in Pike County, Illinois, with a muzzleloader, and there's 30 deer in the soybeans, and I could shoot any one of them.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is a big feeder.
Yeah, it's one big feeder.
It's the same thing.
Same thing. Yep. No, that's what we actually had that topic of conversation when I was in Idaho elk hunting just a couple weeks ago. Well, and when I was in Idaho camping a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, not a lot of elk.
No. And one of the guys that was in camp was from Montana, and he was originally from California, or actually originally from New York, then California, then Wyoming, then Montana. A super nice guy. And we got to talking about whitetail hunting, and he's talking about, you know, what do? Y'all sit on trails and river bottoms? He's like, no, sir, we sit over feeders.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, y'all feed them? And I was like, well, let me explain to you the situation that's going on here. If we did not feed these deer, there would be no way to pattern them, because there is no specific thing that they're attracted to in the, other than maybe if you can find a grove of oak trees. But, I mean, there's oak trees, And I kind of explained to him, I was like, look, the only way we're going to kill these deer is sitting over a feeder. And you're not gonna spot and stalk them. You may get lucky in certain situations. Yeah, not with a bow. Rifle, and the other thing we do in Texas is rattle them. And that's, you know, when they're rutting, but it's still a rifle thing. Every now and then somebody, you know, I know that can get one with a bow rattling. But he's like, so what's the feeder situation like? I said, so we'll either be either a pop-up or like a ladder stand up in the tree, and the feeder goes off. And I mean, you still have to hunt. If the wind's not right, you're not going to see a deer. You still have to hunt, and you still have to be quiet, and you still have to watch your movements. And I said, honestly, sometimes I think it's harder than spot and stalking like I do out west, because unlike spot and stalking, I have 30 eyes in this area, and, you know, does and everything else looking at me. And you've got to pick the time when you're going to make the shot and everything like that. And he's like, man, I think I'd like to maybe come try that. I was like, bro, right. Look, let me tell you, if you want to come on down, I will make you a believer in Texas deer hunting and how much fun it really is. And I said, one thing that I will say is, for an archery hunter, there's nothing better than sitting over a feeder, because you actually have a legit opportunity every time you go sit in a blind to actually get something.
And pigs, too.
Pigs and axes and all the other things with turkeys. And he's like, man, I went 3 years bow hunting without killing anything. And I was like, well, that sounds like that sucks to me. Right.
You know? Yeah, if you're in East Texas, you can wood duck.
With all everything. But yeah, no, so he's gonna come down and hunt, and I'm kind of excited about showing him, you know, this is,
well, that's good that he's open-minded, because I think and whether you're a Texan or a Montanan or you know, Midwesterner or whatever, so much of your philosophical beliefs on hunting is formed at a very primitive age. This is how my dad did it.
Yep.
And if you don't do it like that, you're doing it wrong. And my take is, I don't really give a crap how you hunt, as long as it's legal.
Yeah, 100%.
You do you. And maybe, like, your guy wants to come down here, maybe I'll come do it your way sometime.
Yeah.
And I want to see it all and experience it all. And I don't, judging someone because they do it different than you. Like, our neighbors to the east, Louisiana, you can run dogs for deer.
Yeah.
Have I ever done that? No. And but you know what? I probably would if I went to Louisiana. I'd try it once.
I grew up doing it, and it was an absolute blast.
Oh, and Four Acres, that's all.
So my dad would drive me to Toomey Starks. We had a lease that we never put a box blind on. We leased a 10,000-acre track from the paper company. And all his buddies over there had dogs, and we ran dogs, and we shot them with shotguns, a buckshot, and it was, oh my gosh.
And that's a lost art too. Like,
it was so fun
shooting at running game.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, that's unethical, dude.
Yeah.
How do you think we got here as humans? We always just waited for the animal to sit there and be still and then shoot it broadside. No. So Pennsylvania, they do deer drives all the time. Yeah. I think Pennsylvania has the second most deer hunters, like numbers wise, after Texas. Like licenses sold. And that's like part of their culture is doing deer drives, and it's all shooting at running game. Europe, like, that's another place I'd love to go. Go to Austria or Hungary and do a big boar driven hunt.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. The videos of that looks awesome.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't even know the deer dog thing was a thing. Like, you can run dogs for deer.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, we don't do it around here.
And it's pretty common in like Appalachia. I think the Carolinas allow it. Maybe West Virginia. Don't quote me on that, but there are plenty of other states that do allow.
They literally have a season. Like, they open up gun season, non-draft season is what it's called, and then it goes for like 2 weeks. And they open up a dog season, runs for like 3 or 4 weeks, closes, regular gun season where you can't drive them with dogs, and then it opens up again for like a week at the end of the year for dogs. We had so much fun doing that. Like, my dad would bring me to do that, and God, it was so much fun. So much fun.
Well, that's all the old men around here that grew up hunting Southeast Texas. That's all of them are like, man, I wish I could still run my dogs.
Oh, yeah. It was a thing here for a while.
Now the big thing down here is hog dog hunting.
That's why there's still counties where you can't run. Well, I don't know if they've changed it now, but there for a while you couldn't use a blood tracking dog in certain counties in East Texas for the longest. I don't know if that's changed or not. I haven't had to call one over here, but there were several East Texas counties that it was illegal to call a blood tracking dog if you had a deer that was wounded because the dog hunters.
I wonder if my buddy from Manawak, he had taught his weenie dog how to track deer blood. So he put a bell on him. And it's so funny. Every time he shoots a deer, he hunts a lot of South Texas stuff. So it'll run out in the brush, and you'll just hear that weenie dog. And when it gets on it, it'll sit there and start shaking.
That's funny.
This little weenie dog.
Yeah.
Roxanne, I believe her name is. Something cocky. You're
about to have a Zen there, I see.
Oh, yeah. No, I was trying to open the bottom to put this old Zenjamin Franklin in, but... But I can.
One thing I was going to say when you're talking about, you know, I don't care how you hunt as long as it's legal. I think sometimes our worst enemy in the hunting realm is ourselves.
For
Cause,
sure.
Because we talk so much smack to each other, You know, like, I can't tell you how many times, well, just for example, my deer that I shot at High Roller with my bow.
Oh, my God.
How much shit did I get for that because it was behind a high fence?
Dude, I'm talking, that was...
Which doesn't bother me. I could give a shit less. Dude, like
on that post we did that at the time, that was our most liked photo on Instagram, and it got like 4,000 likes and had like 200-300 comments, which is for us is a lot.
Yeah,
you know, and everybody was like
talking shit.
Oh my God, so it was only shit talking. That was it. There wasn't nothing positive. Like, you know, congratulations on the whitetail. That's an awesome whitetail.
Yeah,
I wish I had the most of it. The talking trash is jealousy,
yeah,
because you have the means to be able to do that, and the majority of the population does not, and whatever. But the people that are just like, you know, that do have the means and then still talk trash, it's like,
yeah, I mean,
who gives a
damn? Now is it affecting you?
How? Right. Not at all.
No, not at all.
I feel like that's all it's turned into.
My biggest argument is it was done legally. It was done
ethically.
You shouldn't even have to defend it.
And I didn't even hide it.
We didn't. We didn't.
Like we said, it was a high fence whitetail hunt. Yeah. Like, it was no, like, we're trying to pass this off as a low fence deer or any of this stuff. No.
No, no. It was from the beginning, I think it, like, I even tagged Champion Ranch or whatever. High Roller Ranch. Yeah, like High Roller Ranch, whitetail, you know.
Ryan invited me there one time, and it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's a cool spot.
Yeah. Like, but I'll be honest, like, those deer, they don't do much for me, and I wanted, so I hunted axis deer there, but that range was,
fun. There's still a personal opinion, like to me, I want a 150, 160 if I could, like 8-point, just a cod, you know, just like a real, and if I saw it in, you know, Winnie America and got a shot, you know, that would be like the most ideal, but also if I had the chance to go do what Ryan did, I'm not going
to. Well, that's my whole deal. I get the opportunity to go. I get invited to go. I get to go. It's for free.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell them no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do I get a thrill out of it? A little bit, you know, but I get way bigger thrill shooting a 120-inch deer in Fredericksburg, Texas with my bow than I would ever.
That video I posted last year of you, that I don't remember if it was a big 8 or
a
big
7.
A big 7. That Ryan like did the whole video and was like, "Is he down?"
I didn't look Brian.
He didn't look Brian, but he was just like, Ryan was excited. You could tell genuine excitement.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Cool." I posted that video. It got a bunch of likes. People, you know.
Yeah. What made it really cool for me is, you know, I've got 14 blinds, 14 feeders, 14 cameras going, cell cameras going on the ranch. So I pretty much know every deer that I'm going to see at a particular blind. Well, this deer walked out. I've never seen this deer before.
Mm.
Just a beautiful, I mean, just, I'm a big, I would shoot a coal buck every day if I could over a trophy. I don't know what it is about little freaky coals that I like to shoot. And this was just a beautiful hill country buck. He was, he scored 118 inches as a 7-point. So if he'd have been an 8-point, he'd have been a really respectable hill country deer.
Yeah.
And a mature deer comes out, never seen him before. And I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this buck. He's real chocolate horns, real good frame and shape. And starts raking a tree and like does this whole thing in front of me. And I'm like, oh God, you know, I start shaking, you know? And I'm like, I literally had just shot a 300 inch deer with my bow like 2 weeks prior. And I'm just over here just like melting over this 118 inch 7-point.
Yeah,
and he comes in, gives me a shot, and make a beautiful shot on him, and I was so jacked up. I had to sit in the tree for like 20 minutes before I could climb down because I was so excited about this deer. And it you know,
the trophy is so much more than the antler size or mass. 100%. It's in the eye of the beholder. And I was talking to this spearfishing dude from Florida last week, and we were talking about he likes bow hunting, obviously, like spearfishing, and I was like, so I know Florida has tiny deer. He's like, yeah, if you like see a 4-point, you get pretty excited.
Yeah.
Or if you shoot an 8-point, it's going to be like 110 inches. And you know, it just puts into perspective. Trophy is, is up to the individual. And also it's a regional thing. Like hill country, the bucks don't get big racks.
No.
I hunted Ozona for like 10 years before I ever went down south. And I shot like, you know, close to a 120 one time, like a big 10-point 120, and I was like, oh my God. And then we went down to Cthulhu, and I was like, oh, these are different here. Yeah. These are different. There's like every 8 point that's walking by, Cole ate that's over 130, and it's like, oh my God.
Right.
Yeah. There's 10, 12s, there's non-typicals, there's like all this stuff, everything just masked the size of the Zen can. Bay Dragon, sponsored by Zen. No. it's insane. Like West Texas, and then East Texas, you might have some, you know, wide mass deer, but you don't get, you know, the width. Down here, the piney woods and stuff like that. You're just.
That's what I you know, that's what I kind of preach people. I bring a lot of people to Fredericksburg, and I'm like, look, you're not going to get that Texas. That's what I told Martin. I said, look, you're not going to get that Texas 160-inch, 180-inch deer. I said, but if you see like 110, 120-inch deer that's mature, you know, that's five and a half, older, you know, that's a trophy.
Yeah.
Especially as many hunters as in this area. Like, that's a trophy deer. Be very proud if you get the chance to take one. He ended up killing two of them. Right. Well, he shot one deer. That deer that Martin shot, that last one, that 8 point, I have been chasing that deer for 4 years.
Yeah, well, maybe that's just luck, or maybe Martin's just a better bow hunter than you.
Yeah, very well.
But, we're going to go with Martin's a better bow hunter.
Where I was getting at with this after chasing him for 4 years is that deer had to be at least 8 years old. Mm. I mean, that deer, and you can just tell it in the picture. Like, his horns look like they melted on each other. Like, it's just real, like, stunted look and just big old Roman nose. But, yeah. No, Martin, yeah, he sent me a text message. He goes, there's an 8 point at the feeder. So I pulled my camera up real quick, and it just took a picture. And I was like, oh, you got to be shitting me. Like, I'm like, shooting Martin.
Why is he still breathing?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, shooting Martin.
And he probably was like, already did. I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. He smoked him too. I actually got a picture of the arrow in the deer, like in his shoulder as he's like turning away to go out after Martin shot him. That was pretty badass.
The Fredericks, I can't wait to go back. Dude, Ryan's little ranch he has up there, dude, it's so much fun. We brought Tanner, I guess it was 2 years ago now, that for his first ever like deer hunt.
Yeah, we're talking about like a grown man with children.
Uh-huh. Yeah, first deer hunt. He just never done it. He just grew up waterfowl hunting.
Big,
you know?
Duck hunter.
Big duck hunter, been waterfowl hunting since he was like 8, 9 years old, you know. So he just never, but he never had the opportunity being in Southeast Texas. You don't really, you know, that's not what you claim to be. Your right. claim to
Some
fame
of us
is,
anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, deer hunting. We travel to go do it. But Ryan was like, hey, I'm going to put Tanner in the blind with you. You make the call, you know, if it looks good. And one came out, dude. And it was every single deer that walked out, I was like, you know, get all tense up like a Jack Russell about to chase a squirrel. I'm like, hold on. That's the one. I'm talking, as soon as I was like, as soon as you get a free shot, I didn't even finish the sentence.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, we got it. And he ended up shooting four. Yeah. Nice. He shot four deer on his first ever trip. I think we all zeroed.
And Tanner
was a,
shot.
That was that rough year, man. That was a bad year there. We had a year that just, I don't know what happened to the deer. They just weren't there. I mean, or if they were there, they were in the acre. I don't know. It just, we went from seeing, you know, 20 deer a hunt to seeing two, if we were lucky, kind of deal. And it, I don't know, it was just one of those years. Last year was better. Yeah. And this year is just, judging by the cameras, I haven't been there yet, but judging by the cameras, this year is going to be incredible. Mm-hmm. Lots of deer.
Mm. So, you have any, I mean, besides Africa planned, do you have anything else big? I mean, right now you're down. You traveled 5.5 hours today just to come shoot, you know, some alligator, dove, duck.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, no, this is a – I usually miss early teal season because of elk hunting. Mm-hmm. And I hate that because I started out as a waterfowler. And so it always is like tugging at my heartstrings, like that I should be here on the coast in the rice or wherever, somewhere around here, around Winnie, chasing blue-winged teal. So I'm thrilled to, you know, be back down here. I think this is the first time in 5 or 6 years that I will get to actually do a proper early teal hunt.
Well, I'm looking forward. We get to hunt with you tomorrow.
Get
so.
To share the blind with you in the morning.
Yeah, I'm looking excited. Forward to, man.
I'm excited.
Get some documentation with you.
Yeah.
Hopefully it meets your standards, you know.
One of the, I'm sure we will. One of the coolest things that I actually own, though, is a pair of boots. From one of my first like teal gator experiences here. Mm-hmm. And I had the thing tanned to this beautiful chocolate color, and it just kind of sat in my closet in my recording studio for years. And I like came across a bootmaker And he was like, I'll make you a pair of boots. And I was like,
that's cool.
Okay. And like to wear something on your feet that you killed yourself. Yeah.
I that's
like
that. Dope.
Yeah, that's real cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a pair of gator boots. It's not nothing that I killed. Hopefully by this next year I can do that. Just, you know, I just need to bite the bullet. It's not that I don't have the access to shoot the alligator and do all that. It's just
they're proud of their hand craftsmanship for sure.
Oh, yeah. It's the pulling the bull pulling the trigger on I gotta pay for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't pay for it. Otherwise, I might still be in your same situation.
Yeah, yeah, they're not cheap at all.
You know what I'm super stoked about though is to watch Henry potentially get his first alligator. Would be,
you know, I tell you what,
be awesome.
You know, out there earlier setting lines and Henry, you know, baiting the hook and everything. That was cool to watch, man.
Yeah,
father and son. It was.
Yeah,
I was proud of him. At first he was like, and I was like, you don't really have a choice, dude. He's like, all right, you know, this is the weekend or the weekday.
Yeah.
We're not here on the weekend, but
I just wanted him to have I didn't want him to show up to
it. You got to earn it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want him to show up to a line with the gator on it.
I
wanted him to see the before and what, you know, goes into setting the line. And, you know,
he'd never experienced, like, I mean, the boat got stuck for a little while and like going through, when I say we're like, going through the swamp. No, we're not really in the swamp anymore. Now we're just kind of like
we're just
almost on dry land, just going through some reeds and stuff. And
I thought we were stuck for a minute.
It was super cool.
Yeah.
Look, and he'll realize too. I mean, he's only 11, so he'll realize in the future like how cool it is to be able to do the before and after.
Oh yeah.
The whole situation, because majority of alligator hunts, just anywhere, Texas, Louisiana, if you buy an alligator, it's the hunter. The landowner, whoever it is, already has the line set.
Right.
They already know where the gator is. It's on the night before.
Yeah.
And you come out, shoot it, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people pay a lot of money to do that.
You need to dance with the rancid chicken and earn that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
If you get the chance to do it, you respect it more.
Oh, for
you know?
Sure.
And I got to be a part of some kids. It was an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We took them down here at Jenkins, and they shot a 12-4 and a 13-1, and it was their first alligators, and that's some up studs, you know, for a first one.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
no doubt.
Yeah.
And they were pumped, and I was like, you know, but they only got the experience of the
gator on the line.
It was on the gator on the line.
Yeah,
but we let the dad, you know, pull help tug up the, you know, try to make it as big of an experience as you can. But if you get to go out there, set the line. Then go out there and, you know.
Well, and we're doing this. We don't know what's going to be on the lines tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
When we go check them. Like, it's going to be.
It's a surprise.
Yeah, surprise.
There's no trail cameras that I'm telling you.
No. So, I mean, and we, you know, unlike most hunts where, hey, I got a 10 something on the line. Who wants it? No, it's raw. We're going to go out there. We're going to see what it is. We might pull up a 6-footer. We might pull up a 13-footer. You know,
premium conditions out there, though. When I mean premium looking marsh, that's good stuff. Out there, reservoir.
I am proud of that kid though, because he doesn't shy away from eating anything.
Oh, he smashed the shit out of that food earlier. Yeah, dude.
I mean, like dove hearts. If I say, shot a nilgai and I did them like. The ball's like Rocky Mountain oysters.
Oh yeah,
he was all over it.
Yeah,
and my girls are the same way too. Like, they'll try any meat. Henry will eat some vegetables. The girls, if it's green, they're like, no, I'm not interested. Yeah. But like heart, liver, you name it, he's in. No question asked. Like one time, I'm like cutting up some tenderloin to sear in the cast iron, and he just walks by and just grabs a piece of raw meat and just eats it, like when he was 7. And I was like, that hasn't been cooked. He's like,
my kind of guy, dog.
Right. I'm raising a caveman here.
He probably, have you checked this 23andMe? He probably is like 98% Neanderthal. That's like straight up. He did have kind of a big forehead when he walked in.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you that.
And he's killed 5 deer up to this point. But I was telling Ryan, like, and I've talked about it on my show, like, he's right-handed and left-eye dominant. It really is this big cluster F, really. It's very difficult. So he's struggling. So when he shoots a rifle, he wears an eye patch on his left eye because he can't close his right, or open his right eye and close his left eye. So I have to close his left eye for him. And I've tried to like have him shoot left-handed, and that just frustrates him. So the shotgunning, he's killed two dove last season. He's like 0 for 15 this season on shots, but I'm like trying to get, just keep both eyes open, dude. That's like, yeah. I do that.
Like, that's how, yeah. Shotgunning, so like, so if so you can keep both eyes
if he
open.
Can, if he shoots off, a teal this week, yeah. like that would be, that would be like if exceptional.
Oh, yeah. Well, if we have one that lands in the decoys.
Swat it.
Yeah, yeah,
swat it.
And, water swat that thing.
And I don't judge for water swatting.
No.
No.
No. I'm proud.
You got
of
up
it.
At, what, we're getting up at well, 4 or something.
4:30 probably, yeah.
And like back when I used to hunt a lot of public land, like, we spent the night out there.
Oh, yeah, dude. 100%.
And like, you're going to tell me I can't water swat it? I spent the night out here, bro. Yeah. I'm going to shoot
I'm
that
shooting
thing.
Everything yeah. I can.
And I hope there's two of them on the water when I pull the trigger. Yeah.
I don't know why people talk line them down up. On that. Well, I mean, that you did all that work. You worked that bird into the spread.
It's the same with the high fence still. It's
Hey, you're so good you made it land. That's right. How good of a duck hunter you are.
Dude, if I could have all six of my ducks be on the water and I can shoot all of them without them flying, I would.
I don't. So I usually shoot the first one off the water.
No, I'm gonna shoot.
And then
I'll
shoot.
And
then
all.
I try to like because you know at this point if I can't basically flush them off the water and still shoot them out of the air,
I'm at the point.
But you got to get one in the bag first. Oh, yeah. Like getting skunked is.
I love to let everybody else start shooting, and then I let them start going up in a way. That's when I
then
go
you
in
see
there.
The 28 gauge barrels.
He's kind of cocky, this guy.
Oh, dude. Do you know how many solos last year I watched this dude? They'd come in and. Like, everybody just kind of waits, like, who got it? And Ryan, you just see his 28 gauge come up. He goes, I got it. Folds it. And I'm like, I probably would have, you know, whiffed it.
I had some guys from Louisiana. They're customers of mine. And they were hunting with me at Pipkin. And four of them in the blind plus me and a guide. And I use the term guide loosely because I grew up on that ranch. So I pretty much guide myself. But we're
told
out
you
there.
Cocky. Listen,
oh, I know, dude. I'm telling you, he's Ryan Cocky. We're holding.
Well, only in duck hunting, but so model duck comes in, and I mean, it's 20 yards cupped up. I'm like, all right, guys, kill him. Boom, 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 boom. Nothing, and it's going out, getting out 35 yards. Throw my gun up. I said, it's banded. Boom, shoot, falls. Dog brings it back, and it's banded. And I was like, told y'all, sons of bitches.
I don't believe in banded birds. I've seen literally thousands of ducks die. Now, I live in a different part of the world where there's not as many bands.
Yeah.
I've never been on a hunt where one's banded.
Hell, last week?
I think it's a joke. I think you guys just buy them. I know Ducks Unlimited says they ban these things. I don't believe
you know what?
For a second.
I'm with you.
The math doesn't add up. If I've seen, let's say 3,000 ducks get shot in 18 years of duck hunting or whatever it is, like, and plus geese and cranes, like, never won? Come on.
That's why it's a trophy, man. I feel as though it's a trophy.
Of course it is, and I'm just bitter because I don't have one.
I don't either. And I'm like, that's what I grew up doing. I've grew up waterfowl hunting. I have shot literally thousands of birds, traveled across the country, shot hundreds of birds up north, never have shot one. And, like, Mitchell, Matthew, Tanner, Ryan, like everybody I hunt with the shoots, and I'm like,
oh, look at my lanyard. I got like five, six, 10 of them on here.
I'm not bringing my lanyard out in the morning now.
It'll
scare them away.
Like, you ordered those on Amazon.
Yeah, it's too shiny. Cable, thank you for bringing this barrel proof Elijah Craig with you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Peace offering, and it's a damn good
I need
one.
To get rid of it because I'm going to go for the Sober October again, try to lose like 10 pounds and just eat meat.
I know a great outfitter in Idaho you can go with, and you can start the track of the Sober October.
I will tell you this. I haven't hunted in Idaho, but I have played golf in Idaho, and it is beautiful. Like Coeur d'Alene, Idaho
is gorgeous.
One of the most beautiful places, if not the most beautiful place in North America, to me. It's so awesome.
If it wasn't for the beauty of where I was at, it would have been a miserable experience.
I'm ready for a hunt next year, Ryan.
Yeah, that's gonna be a fun one. I was actually telling Cable about Montana. We're gonna do a mule deer hunt. Well, it was a deer hunt in Montana, and we're gonna trying to decide what to do yet. I'm kind of waiting to see what regulations come out too. Because while I was up there, I did figure out that I think they're gonna put trophy regulations on the Missouri breaks, so that hunt that we were talking about, now we can do it further east. We can launch the boats, and what we're talking about doing is bringing some boats up there. launching them in the Missouri River and going in from the river on some BLM or some state land. That way we're away from the roads, but we're on the river and camping along the river. It'd be interesting to do, fun to do. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have hunted elk and black bear in Montana.
Yeah.
And I have killed nothing.
Yeah.
I've shot at an elk in Montana, and I'm like, you could see, we were in this burn, we're sitting there eating lunch, and I'm hunting with my buddy Chisholm that I do my political podcast with, and this guy Ty Stubblefield, who used to be on Born and Raised Outdoors, and then worked for BHA until he realized BHA was a bunch of douchebags.
Yeah.
And he was like the only conservative-minded person with a brain at national, like the chapter levels in the states, they can do good things, but BHA nationals run by libtards.
Yeah.
Like, we don't think you should own an AR-15 kind of libtards.
Yeah.
Because they told the Land Towney, the former executive director, is on record as saying that. Like, I know that for a fact.
Jeez.
Sorry, Land. Not really. But anyway.
Don't say sorry.
I'm very unapologetic. But so I shoot, and we're sitting there eating lunch, and Chisholm makes one cow call. And all of a sudden, this little 5x5 just appears into the middle of the burn, coming right at us. We're sitting on a log in the burn. Like, he's coming. And I'm like, I'm up. It's my turn. I come to full draw, and I shoot. And you could see my arrow hit a twig and bounce over the elk's back.
Yeah.
So Ty, who has been hunting elk for 25 years, makes a cow call, and I'm like, oh, cool, he stopped it for me. And I'm knocking another arrow, and then the elk's dead, and Ty shot him.
No. Shit.
And he didn't range him or anything. Like, this is like, oh, that's the difference between someone that's been doing this forever and a guy who, you know, a flatlander that comes into the mountains and plays for a week every year.
Were you on the western side of the state?
Oh, dude, I honestly don't even remember. We flew into Missoula.
Yeah, so western.
Western. And then we drove like 2 hours from there. And
probably like White Sulphur
Springs. Now, the funny thing was is that we get there and we get to the trailhead, and Ty, the veteran, you know, and I've been hunting the backcountry for, like, I started fly fishing with my dad and then grouse hunting, and then that's how I got into elk hunting, was like, it evolved from fishing to seeing all these grouse. And this was like a church group. Like, when you turn 21, the dads invited the sons. And so I've been going on that trip now for 20 plus years. And about 15 years ago, I was like, I'm going to start like grouse hunting. And then I was like, I'm going to start putting in for elk tags. And so I've spent a lot of time in the backcountry. And we get to the trailhead, and Ty is like, guys, I don't have my boots. And so he goes into the mountains in tennis shoes for 2 days, and it starts raining and snowing, and he's like, I'm gonna have to hike out, and my wife's gonna bring my boots to the trailhead. And so he left for a couple days.
Came back.
I used to give him crap for that all the time.
That western side of the state's crazy. So I spend most of my hunting time like Miles City east, and it's really totally different.
God, dude.
Jeez.
A little potluck, man.
Dude. Speaking of potluck, dude, Ryan, that food you cooked this afternoon, the preparation, the love, the care you did to that thing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Mitchell's feeling it.
Yeah.
It was delicious.
That was delicious.
Better be careful, buddy. There's a lot of grease and butter in that. It might slip out on you.
That thing vibrated the whole room.
I hope you can hear that. Mitchell shit himself on the podcast. I'm hoping you can hear that on the podcast. Next time, just do it in the mic, dude.
I'd expect nothing less out
of Mitchell. No, dude. I'm surprised he's not eating a bowl right now on this third segment, smashing.
Yeah.
That shit was good, dog. That's what we try to do every time, Cable, when we have someone on. Like, usually, like, me or Mitchell will cook for our guest or whatever, but Ryan's, now that Ryan's been on it more than everybody else on the group, you know, he'll cook too. Like, he's done snapper throats, he's done,
yummy.
You know, different things, but that today...
Yeah.
That's hard to beat, dog.
Yeah, that one.
Homemade roux with some Pure David... cutlets, and that was about he had already started it by the time we got here at 3:30, and we didn't eat until something. I don't know.
Yeah.
He started at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So
yeah. There was a lot of luff that went into that. It was delicious. Henry was like, couldn't get enough.
Well, there's plenty more in there. He could have it for midnight snack or breakfast.
Oh, yeah, dude. Till blind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dude. Where'd you shoot that at?
Put it in third.
You shot that one at Champion?
Champion Ranch, yeah. Yeah, I got another one of those deals, you know.
High fence, you suck.
High fence.
Oh, dude, you suck, dude.
You're going to fly me in a private jet and pick me up and take me hunting and let me shoot what I want to? Yeah, I'm there. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Dude, for me, if I just got the opportunity to go and just film, like, just to be a part of it, that, not even get to do it, I would.
That ranch is... The lodge is like a fucking Bass Pro Shops with the mounts. Like, they have like wildlife scenes and it's incredible. Like, it's, I don't even know how to explain it. It's the most incredible. If you just look it up online, it's the most incredible lodge that I've ever been to.
What's your favorite mount that you have?
My favorite mount that I have. Honestly, it's probably a dead mount with a pintail, mottled duck, and a mallard. Yeah, that we shot. I shot him on the same hunt, and it's a cool mount.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Cable?
I think most people would say, "Well, the first buck I shot, and the first buck I shot while it was like a memory that I won't ever forget." And I was an adult when I did it. That buck is now in the closet in my studio, and you can only see it if you're in the closet. It's a little 8-point, but. The one that I think is the coolest is a lynx that I trapped in Canada, and it's on a wooden pedestal, and the pedestal rotates 360 degrees, and the lynx is chasing a pine marten that I also caught on.
That's cool.
In that trip. And when I say I caught them, I did a week on a trap line with two brothers, and we caught three lynx, some coyotes, a pile of pine martens, a wolverine, a fisher, and a wolf. So
very cool.
I think it was my favorite. People ask, like, what is the coolest trip you've ever done? And that one certainly is up there near the top.
I think awesome. Mine's my white Nutri-Rat.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
That's a cool man.
No, my uncle has a white Nutri-Rat. They used to trap. Yeah. He has one. Mine would probably be the Axis. That what I was telling you earlier, that real far shot, miss, bigger than shit, I guess. And then go down there in the same one. 50 yards away. Uh-huh. Like, that was the most memorable one I got.
You know what I like about taxidermy, man? You walk in someone's house, you know, they may have a couple mounts on the wall. You point at one. Hey, man, tell me the story about that when you hunted that, you know? And you go into this whole story of, I was hunting over here and this is what happened. It's just cool, man. It's a cool conversation piece and you're proud of it. It's a trophy, you know?
No, absolutely.
I'll tell you who has a bunch of cool mounts is my father-in-law, Brian Fisher, who we'll hunt with in the morning. He is the only person that I ever heard of, not only killing one, but killing two full albino spoonbills. Killed one year and then killed another one the year following. Has both those mounted. Killed a radio.
Are they piebald? Or are they like?
No, they are straight up red-eyed albino spoonbills. Wow. Yeah, man, two of them. Odds of I know.
That is the most, that is what I.
But if they're related.
That's my new goal.
Yeah.
Did he kill them in the same spot?
He shot them both on White Ranch in Mexico, the blind they call Mexico.
And he reunited the family.
I guess.
Later.
I mean, that's just crazy. And then he shot a radio-collared speckle belly.
Mm.
He's killed a Baikal teal.
Oh, yeah.
It just
that's
like
a, that's like a South American one.
Yeah, yeah. Killed one of those. Killed some kind of Muscovy mallard mix. I mean, just... But you're talking about a man that duck hunts every day duck season for the last 40 years. So, obviously, there's going to be some opportunities to kill some shit. So,
yeah.
Have you mounted your quill yet?
No.
Because when we went up north, we actually shot some quill geese.
Huh. Oh,
which
cool.
Was, you know...
Yeah.
That's pretty rare. I guess in terms of, like, you know, how rare... At least, like, when they band, you know, birds and stuff, you know, they...
Yeah.
But those quills never really go past, you know, a certain...
Mm-hmm.
Like... I mean, I guess they go past Montana, but like
yeah.
When they come out of Canada, they don't go real far south. Yeah. Like, you're not going to see a quill down here. And shot two of them.
Yeah, one of them. Birds are up in Canada on Quill Lake in Canada, and they roost up there, and they have like some albino characteristics. And like some of them, like their whole wing will be white.
Yeah, like more piebald than anything. Yeah.
And
yeah.
We shot some. I mean, they had some white patches, you know, but they didn't have like the full blown wing or anything like that. But they're cool looking birds for sure.
Back on the band thing too, I think.
Don't exist.
Well, I think
it doesn't.
The reason, I think it's the area you hunt. Like, there's a lot of bands killed here because you have Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge, McFadden National Wildlife Refuge, Calcasieu Wildlife Refuge, and they do a lot of banding in that area. So traditionally, those birds are going to come back and forth. And I think I've been a part or I've seen probably, I don't know, 40 or so snow geese bands over the years. And out of that 40, probably 35 of them were banded in Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge.
Really? Mitchell has one. Well, it was a juvenile.
That was not a juvenile.
Oh, not a juvenile.
Lesser snow. I have to look back and see. It was way the hell up there in Canada.
Yeah.
Like,
and shot in Winnie.
And it was 13 years old.
And this band was like wore out. It was like just all wore out. Old bird.
Like all the model ducks we shot are all banded here.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I mean,
a lot
I think
that people in the Midwest have a pile of bands and like, well, yeah, they banded those geese like in the next county over in Ohio.
Most of those are banded in the park.
Yeah, no, for real. Yeah, they are.
True. And I mean, they ban way more Canada geese than anything, obviously, but mallards.
Mm-hmm.
The only bands that I've ever killed that weren't banded here was Bentil, Pintail, and I shot one banded mallard here, like literally right across the fence from where we're sitting right now. And it was banded in Manitoba. But everything else has been banded right here. So what I'm getting at is if you're hunting where they banned them, you have a pretty damn good chance of shooting a band.
For sure. We have like good news, though, on the pintail front for next year.
Yeah.
But we also have terrible news for
teal season. Yeah.
Let's hear both of those because I've heard a little bit about them. So you said first the
pintail. So the pintail limit, I think, is going up to 3 birds.
It can be, yeah. Yeah, so in the central flyway, they're gonna possibly be up to 3 pintail.
That's good for us.
That's huge for us here.
Oh yeah.
But the crappy thing is, so blue wing teal numbers, and it's somewhere in like the 4 millions. The annual waterfowl survey, it has to be 4.x million, and it was 100,000 below that. And this isn't Texas doing this. This is the feds. Like if the number falls below X, then we have to cut the season to 2 weekends. So next year it's going to be only 2 weekends.
And I heard that. I didn't know how true it was.
No, it's true. It's happening.
You know, my whole deal is, how about we keep the 3 weekends and drop it down to 4 birds like it used to be? Why are we going to cut it down to 2 weekends and keep it at 6
birds? Or what if we only hunted Thursday through Sunday?
Exactly.
And got rid of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Yeah.
And I don't know, like they say, oh, the numbers are this, the numbers are that. Like, how accurate are their numbers? You know what I mean? Like, how do migration patterns
change. Like, I see in North Texas, dude, I see blue-winged teal on Lake Louisville in the middle of the summer.
Oh, yeah. That,
and you're telling me that those things are still making it back to the Dakotas to nest? No, they're nesting there.
Yeah, yeah. And like, there's teal that nest here.
So there's tons of birds that fall through the cracks on the survey that aren't counted.
And then, I mean, just for instance, in our area, like, there's one guy that I know personally that guides on almost 40,000 acres around here. He doesn't hunt twice a week on there. There's thousands upon thousands of blue-winged teal on his property as we speak that are never going to get harvested, that are, you know, won't get touched, don't get accounted for, nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, you have a bunch of untapped land also just in this area that doesn't get hunted. People are like, oh, the blue-winged teal numbers are down. I guess if you look at, like, how, like, the marsh and everything's doing this year, but there's a lot of land that doesn't get hunted.
Well, I feel bad for the outfitters because that's a lot of money.
Yeah, well, another thing, too, next year, this year, no conservation snow geese.
Yeah,
I heard that, too.
Yeah, and that's tough, too, on the outfitters. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that we have as many geese as we used to, but when we do actually get geese in this county, it's when it's conservation season, late in the year.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know.
We get them after the conservation season's done. That's when the geese come in.
And I know I've talked about that on this podcast, but I show cable down the road here, grandparents' place where I used to spend a lot of time. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night because the geese were so loud coming over the house.
Mm.
And now, like, to see a concentration of snow geese in this county is like, everybody's talking about, like, oh, we got a concentration.
That's how my deer lease is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's in like Knox City area. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, we all in campers, and our neighbors have, I would say it's probably like it's a huge lake. It's 400 or 500 acres. It's a big lake. And they have essentially at any time 10 to 30,000 speckle bellies on it. Ugh. Plus another 5,000-6,000 snow geese.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, you know, give or take 3,000 or 4,000 here or there. Yeah. I mean, but it's so loud at night that it keeps you up.
Yeah.
And literally, but going back to bands, the guy that runs the lease, my buddy Matt, last season he was just sitting at camp and it was foggy and the speckle bellies are flying low. He gets his 12 gauge out, shoots one speckle belly, boom, drop, band. I had a big middle finger for him.
Yeah,
so they imagine. Do exist. You saw it firsthand.
No, I wasn't there. He sent me the picture.
Well,
I heard the story from other guys that were at camp that weekend. Like, you should have. You'd be so pissed. It's like,
we hunted Saturday, and Mitchell, brother Matt, was with me, and we got a band of teal.
Mm. Yeah. Last Saturday. So yeah, your chances for tomorrow morning are,
look, they're the same they've always been, zero.
Ethernet. So Ethernet. There's no such thing as bands. I tell you, I've never seen one.
I'm gonna go. We're all duck hunters here. I've got a cool hunt coming up this season, and it actually got canceled last year because of like a weather system in New England. So I was in Mexico coos deer hunting, and me and my buddy got Montezuma's revenge like you wouldn't imagine. We were walking up the mountain.
I think Mitchell has it right now.
I have been there. I've had it. I know what you're talking about.
We're walking up the mountain, and I don't know I have it yet. And all of a sudden, my buddy Sawyer's like, something's not right, man. I'll meet you up at the glassing spot. And I'm like, are you all right, dude? He's like, I'll be up there in a minute. And I'm like, okay. And then like, splatter. I keep walking, and like 30 yards later, I'm like, oh my God, you know. And then it's bad. And we're sharing a little camper in this little like crappy little Mexican camp, and we take turns, like we're like up trained, you know, up all night, like rotating the bathroom.
Splattering.
And then one morning, he's in the bathroom, and I've got to go so bad that I'm like, I just run outside of the camper and go behind it and just go
and blow out.
He's in the bathroom. He's like, oh my God, I can hear you. I was like, well, then hurry up, man. I'm like, I'm trying to tell you, I got to go.
Yeah.
And I had already called my doctor, Jeff.
Yeah.
And was like, dude, have something waiting for me when I get home. Yeah, you know, I'm dying here.
Please, Jeff.
Yeah, how long did that linger for? That Shujinko's revenge, I call it. You call it Montezuma.
Montezuma, yeah.
Shujinko's?
So I had a little experience with it. My wife and I went to like the Cancun area.
Yep.
Like that summer, and I got it on the next to last day. And I read everything about traveler's diarrhea, Montezuma's revenge, which is really just Giardia.
Shujinko's.
Right. And so it said by like day 4, 5, 6, it should run its course and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I'm just like waiting. I'm like, okay, day 5. I'm like, surely it's going to go away. You know, no. By day 8, I was like, I've waited too long. I have to call the doctor now. And it's like, I took a one dose of amoxicillin or whatever it was, and it cleared it up. So I knew the remedy, and I had it waiting for me when I got home. But so I'm in Mexico with the trots, and I'm sitting in the truck and everyone else is hunting. I've already shot my deer. And I should be up there glassing with them. And I'm like, my
stomach. It's too risky.
I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and just crap every 5 minutes by the truck. And I get a call from Kent Cartridge. And they're like, hey, because I was going to land in Dallas, spend the night with the family one night, and then leave for New England to go on this sea duck hunt. And he's like, dude, the weather's bad. We're going to have to postpone until next year. There's no other dates. So I'm going to get to do that this year. And I'm going to call it an old squaw. You can call it whatever you want, but mm-hmm. that's what it is to me.
Old school.
Because we're real PC on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe some eiders and scoters. So I'm super stoked about that. It's something that I think that's like the epicenter of waterfowling in North America.
Yeah. No, that's one of the coolest. My uncle, the one that has the albino Nutrirat, uh-huh. he has an old squall that he shot in Anahuac, which
is
like dope. You know what I mean? Like that's never seen one besides that one. And, you know, in person, it's just a mount, but mm-hmm. he shot that one, and
he's got some cool mounts.
Yeah. Man. But like we're saying, like somebody that done it for, you know, he's 70 years old.
Yeah.
He was the biggest alligator processor in the state of Texas. He guided for years. he got a chance and got to shoot one of those things. I'm like, if I saw that, I'd be like, damn, that's the biggest pintail I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Just freaking.
Sea duck hunt would be epic.
Yeah.
Epic, epic. I want to do that, and I want to go to Washington and shoot the widgeons.
Let's
just
go
for
that.
The chance of getting a Eurasian.
I got a connection.
Yeah. You know.
Pit boss. Connection. Oh, that pit boss waterfowl guy.
Has anyone shot a cinnamon teal?
Yeah.
No.
Bastard.
We shot one on Pipkin last year.
Our buddy Joe shot multiple. But, like, he hunts down a lot of, like, Port Aransas and shit like that, Port Lavaca, and they kind of will skirt that a little bit more. Like, he's...
we're not in their flyway.
I did not kill one. I haven't killed one here. I've killed one in way West Texas. But there was one killed last year on the Pipkin, yeah.
I'm thinking about going to Mexico for upland, true wild quail.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do dove. And they do ducks.
Nice.
And I was asking, I was like, if I come, can I get a cinnamon teal? He's like, yeah, I know where they are, on Lake Guerrero.
Yeah.
I've been chasing them for 20 years, you know. That's pretty enticing.
The dude.
Can I assume I can bring it back from Mexico.
I think you can.
It's a
UPS box.
No. I've brought some crazy stuff back on an airplane. Like.
In your backpack?
I had a mountain lion cape and skull in like a little handheld Yeti, and they're putting it through the x-ray, and they're like, what is this? And I was like,
it's my cat,
it's a mountain lion. And they're like, no way. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, can we look at it, can we get it out? And they were like infatuated. That's cool. I thought they were gonna be like, you bastard, you came to Colorado and killed our mountain lion. Blah, blah.
That's one hunt I want to do. I want to do the mountain lion deal.
That looks really cool.
You can check it, I mean, from Canada you can check whole bear, like skull, rug, whatever.
That if you want to actually do that, I do have the connection on that deal.
Yeah,
up in Wyoming.
Yeah,
the like they do the dogs and chase the mountain lions. Yeah, and
I
want to
do that. I want to do that before it's illegal in all 50 states.
Right,
Rance. I don't think he got one, but he went and did that up there.
So Colby's got some buddies that do that up there. Colby Epperson.
Yeah,
but no, I think that'd be fun. And I think that would, I think that's going away. I think that's going to go away.
We'll see. We'll see. The pendulum will swing if Colorado falls in November, and
they're going to put mountain. They're going to put a.
Do y'all know about the Colorado situation?
I've been most of it. I follow off of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of his stuff I follow. So I
mean, let's just ban all hunting. Fuck it. You know, why not? Mm-hmm. Like that shit's so fucking evil. Let's ban everything.
He's really. Between Rumors and the Lone Star Outdoor Show, that's where I get most of my...
Rumors is a great...
I try to stay on top of all the anti-hunting stuff. And
you're really good at it. I will tell you that. You are very good at it.
Thank you. And the low-hanging fruit is always predators. Because that's what gets these anti-hunting, you know, people that want to run wildlife management with emotions. And really, when you do that, you don't have any management at all. It's a free-for-all. And like we have... Well, we had before... Joe Biden, 330 million people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how many we have now? And the space for wild animals is only getting smaller.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing is, they can't manage themselves. They'll eat themselves out of house and home. We're preaching to the choir. We all know this. But these idiots think that you can do preservation, which is not conservation. Preservation means we just let the animals sort it out. That worked in 1750.
The thing that you keep posting about the wolves. Them letting the wolves out is the most insane shit to me.
I was
me.
So happy when that one died when they transplanted it. Dude, like, not for I feel bad for the wolf, but the stupidity of the whole situation. Dude,
the whole situation of the wolves, and like we're going to reintroduce timber wolves it's just like, oh my God, what are y'all thinking?
It took 8 months for them to say, we screwed up.
Yeah,
now we have to, we have to relocate the relocated wolves that we brought from Oregon, you know. Why they got them from Oregon? Because Montana and Wyoming and Idaho said, no, Colorado, screw you. We're not giving you wolves. You're going to mess your stuff up.
Yeah.
So they said, no, you cannot get them from us. We're not going to help you out.
We're going to go to Oregon.
Oregon was like, pick us.
Yeah.
And we'll give you the ones that depredate on cattle. And then what did they do when they brought them to Colorado? They depredated on cattle. Livestock. Like it was like, how stupid do you have to be? And do you know who's behind? This is the best part for me. As a diehard conservative, do you know who's behind this whole Colorado, the wolf reintroduction, the protect the cats, like they're, you know, exempt from wildlife management? Governor Polis, who's a man, it's his husband.
Oh,
no. I am not kidding you. His husband is the one that is pulling the strings for wildlife management in Colorado. Emotional base.
Mitchell, he's a gay. Okay, so you're trying to figure that out in your head.
He's a faggot, Mitchell.
I'm just stating the facts. This is Charles' podcast. You can say whatever you want. Yeah. I'm going to cover my own ass, but
yeah,
you can putting it out there, and I'm glad you guys went that way.
Yeah, yeah. He's a homosexual.
Yes.
What is it? It's like wedding crashers.
He's a homo. Yeah. Look, and that's
at the dinner table. Yeah.
Look, and that is fine if you are. Dude, if you swing that way, I don't give a shit.
I don't give a fuck either.
I got plenty of gay friends, but also, all those gay friends that I have, none of them hunt. None of them know shit about conservation, preservation, none of that shit.
Right.
Like, they shouldn't be running that.
Dude, so
it's literally his husband is the one that was behind the wolf management.
That's funny.
The introduction.
The whole thing is, it's not like Colorado didn't have a blank slate to look at when they were adding these wolves. Like, look at what they did to Montana, Wyoming. Look at all Idaho.
You want to talk dollars and cents? Colorado has roughly 200,000 elk, most elk in the country. They do over-the-counter licenses, so they dump the wolves on the landscape. The next year, they do away with over-the-counter licenses.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we got to feed the wolves, right?
Yeah.
So they have what their license sales was in, I think it was 2023, $74 million.
Mm-hmm.
And license tag sales from in-state and non-residents. $54 million of that was from non-residents. The majority of that comes from over-the-counter elk tags.
Yeah. Yep.
So now you have these wolves, and now you want to protect mountain lions, which there's roughly 4,000 mountain lions in Colorado. This is from Colorado Parks and Wildlife's website. 4,000 mountain lions. Hunters kill about 350 to 400 mountain lions a year in Colorado. And now you're going to protect these predators, these apex predators. What's going to happen to the elk?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so we say, well, it's a predator hunting ban, right? No, the goal is to decrease hunter opportunity at the end of the day. Because if you protect the predators, then you have less elk for hunters.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have less people going. But now how does Colorado Parks and Wildlife make up for $54 million in lost revenue? Well, it won't be $54 million, but it could be, we just lost $30 million over the course of the next 10 years as less people come to our state to hunt. How are they going to run their freaking department?
Right.
What these people that are doing this, what they don't like, it's not even just from the hunting perspective of how much money they're going to be losing, but so $54 million was coming from out of state. Dude, all those towns and communities that these hunters are coming out of that are hunting, that are spending money at your local diner, your gas station, you're ruining that state or communities with doing any of this. Just it tumbles down from the hunting aspect all the way down to just the hotel owner.
It's a trickle effect because when we go out of state, you know, we go hunt. We're staying in a hotel. We're eating at restaurants. We're spending money everywhere, you know. Everyone's hurting from this.
What state do you guys think has the most wolves in the country?
So you're going to surprise us. So
Minnesota.
Boom, he nailed it. Minnesota. Okay,
there you go. Thank God. I was about to say it.
Minnesota has more
wolves.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
Over like 2,000.
Yeah.
And it's like twice as many as, it might even be 3,000. They don't really know because they don't really care. And so right now SCI and Sportsman's Alliance are suing the feds because you have Wyoming, Montana, Idaho. Wolves were reintroduced in 95. With the feds promising if you reach 10 breeding pairs and 100 wolves in each state, we'll turn over the management to you guys. Of course, that went through a legal battle. Now, those states finally won. But Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota have three or four times as many wolves combined as the Rocky Mountain states. And they don't have any means to manage their wolves. And so I was talking to this trapper in Wisconsin. He goes, dude, It has ruined what you were just saying, why I brought this up. We used to go to deer camp in the, you know, the North Woods of Wisconsin. We don't go anymore because you used to see 15 deer a day. Now you go for a week and you might see one deer. And all you'll see is wolf crap and wolf tracks. No deer. And so those bars, those restaurants, that there was a seasonal thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're all boarded up. He's like, the town's a ghost town. Like, it's they've destroyed the economy of these local communities. in the name of protecting a species that doesn't need protection.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to extirpate the wolves. Like, I'm a conservationist. Wolves are here, fine, whatever. Let's not reintroduce them anywhere else. But where they are, let's just manage them. I think that's the way we should do it.
Yeah.
But these states have no recourse whatsoever. And every time that the feds get sued and a judge is like, yes, we need to manage them, then here comes another circuit court judge is like, nope, put them back on the protected list. They're endangered. I'm like, but what does the science say? They're not endangered. And the point is, they're all effing Democrats.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have zero.
There ain't no conservative judge being like, we got to protect the wolves at all costs. No.
Yeah.
Well, it's more like a man going, we have to protect the wolves at all costs.
Yeah. So I have zero. I'm dumb to like Minnesota. Like, yeah. I'm saying like hunting. I've never looked at Minnesota to like, okay, let's hunt in Minnesota. But like, so you can't, like, there's no wolf hunting or nothing.
No, there's nothing.
So
I'm going to look it up. And you keep talking. I'm going to tell you how many wolves there are in Minnesota.
I'm just, you know, if they're wanting, like we're saying, if they want to bring back the economy to those places, you open up wolf hunting, give out a certain amount of tags, you start bringing in some revenue, you weed out a little bit, start bringing back some of the deer population. Because I have talked to different people off of so I work on like the river, the Neches River down here, and you talk to different people, most of them Northeasterners and stuff like that. But
coming in on the barges.
Coming in on barges and ships and stuff like that. Like those ships, they're on the ship for 75 days out of the month, but then they're like, I took off my whole...
out of the year.
Yeah.
that was a long-ass month there, cowboy.
Well, yeah, they'll work 75 on, 75 off, yeah. And they're like, well, I'll take off my 75 to hunt, but then like some of them I've talked to before, like it's just where I'm from, it's not even worth hunting anymore.
Yeah.
It's dwindled down to nothing. And
how much revenue are they losing off of that? Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm talking to these guys for 10 or 15 minutes. So I don't get to really like ask them, you know, is it the way y'all's laws are? Is it, you know, is it the predators in this and the whole situation? Like they're just like, I grew up for, you know, 20, 30 years deer hunting at my hometown, and now I can't because there's not one deer.
Mm-hmm. The wolf situation's so crazy because the wolves depredate so much on especially like elk and deer. But a lot of people I've talked to in those western states say those wolves we actually talked about we're in Idaho. They'll hunt and kill animals just to train their pups how to hunt and kill and not even eat it.
And they don't just kill the weak. No. Like, oh, we eat wolves. Oh, they kill the old, the weak, and the sick. No. Wolves are opportunistic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're approaching a herd, they will hunt the one that's closest to them.
Yeah.
But if they see a lone 350-inch bull elk,
they're going to kill it.
They're not going to give them a free pass. Yeah. They're going to try to kill it. So here's your numbers back to those Great Lakes states and how they're getting shafted by the feds. Minnesota has 2024 numbers, 2,700 wolves. Then is Idaho, 1,300, Montana, 1,000, Wisconsin, 975, and then Michigan, 630. So Minnesota, at 2,700, almost has as many as the three Rocky Mountain, states or the Yellowstone, greater Yellowstone states do combined. Yeah. And then you factor another 1,000 in for Wisconsin and 600-something for Michigan.
Yeah.
And they have no recourse. It's just absolutely asinine.
Yeah. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
It's all leftist
bullshit
politicians.
Yeah.
And when I say people, and I know we were going to wrap up here or not, but people get butthurt when I say this. Like, if you're a Democrat and you say you're a hunter, are you really? Because you ain't on my team.
No.
You ain't on my team. Because 99% of all anti-hunting legislation comes from one side of the aisle.
Yep.
I mean, damn near 100% comes from the left. 100% of anti-gun legislation comes from the left. What funds, by and large, conservation? Pittman-Robertson dollars are a huge part of that. People don't understand that if you don't hunt, Mitch, but you shoot your 9mm and your AR on a regular basis, you're contributing maybe more than a hunter because you're getting taxed. You're getting that excise tax on those. The two most popular rounds sold in North America is 9mm and .223. A lot of those aren't hunting rounds. Those are recreational shooters that are buying that, and they're paying to support our wildlife. And you want to take away? You want to take away semi-automatic weapons? Where is that money going to come from? So don't tell me that you're a hunter. And that's the problem, going back to that other entity I mentioned earlier in the show. Like, these people are recruiting all of these leftist hipster hunters, which I'm happy. Come on, man. Like, come into the fold. We welcome you. But if you tell me I'm a hunter, but if the next word out of your mouth is anything other than I'm a hunter, let's hang out. What do you like to hunt? If you say I'm a hunter, but I might as well just punch you in the face, because you're going to say I'm a hunter, but I don't like trapping. I'm a hunter, but you shouldn't run deer with dogs. I'm a hunter, but we don't really need wolf management. No, shut the hell up. I'm a hunter. End of the conversation. And while that might not be for me, like, I may never run deer with dogs. I may never trap on public land, but I don't care if you do. And I will defend your right to do that until my dying breath. Like, so that's the problem. Like, we're recruiting all these Democrat hunters, and then the antis can say, well, hold on. Of course, you're a hunter. You don't like trapping, but this guy's a hunter, and he says trapping's unethical. And all that does is give them validity to their claim, saying, well, some hunters have a problem with it. You know what? Screw you, man. I don't rather you just not hunt. I don't need your help. You're not on my team.
Yeah, they're not, man. They're not on our team.
No, you have that in too many states. Too many states.
It's getting worse and worse, too, you know.
Have the hunter, I'm a hunter, but the crowd. Yeah, like, we just need to...
And I think it's really bad.
Excommunicado.
Yeah.
You're effing out, man.
Yeah, you're done. Yeah. It's really bad in the duck hunting world.
John too, like. Weak.
Duck hunting got, like, cool.
Oh, yeah. That happened. I mean, the cusp of, like, I don't know, I was only maybe a couple years into duck hunting when it got, like, really popular. And then I actually saw, like, hunting a lot of public land, the transformation, like, the duck dynasty and all that. Social media was just getting big and all that, and you could just see, man, like, it was like a switch.
It's like a social status to duck hunt around.
Oh, yeah, you know? No doubt.
But for poor people.
Well, like, man, us. Nowadays it's...
No, I mean that as, like...
Yeah.
Duck hunters aren't going to the High Roller Ranch and dropping big money on a buck. I mean,
but like, back in the day, though, like, the only people that duck hunted when I was a kid were old men. Yeah. Right. Like, the people who duck hunted are like grandparents and stuff, and then there was very little. Like, the only
I
time
I love duck hunting. It's my first.
It's love. My. I love it too. I mean, that's all we grew up doing here. But it was all. It
has
wasn't
definitely changed though.
There's the pros and cons of social media. Like, love it. That's what for our platform, for your platform, for what we do, how we express ourselves. It's great. But then also, like, you had the Swamp People, you had the Duck Dynasty, you had, like, these giant History Channel shows that came out and really threw a wrench into everything, because then people started watching and they're like, oh, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't have
Or I do like this and now I want to do it.
Well, yeah.
But I get, like, as long as you're not the hunter butt crowd, I'm happy to have you. Like, I'm all for more hunters. As long as
you're doing things ethically and legally.
Really, as long as you're not voting Democrat.
Come on.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I think you can sum it up that easily. And I you were telling me when we were putting out the Gator lines today, Mitch, you're like, I used to try to keep our politics off of our page.
Oh, yeah. I
did. That ship has sailed.
Oh, no, it sailed.
Yeah. It is gone,
but
man.
But we started, you know, we were like, let's
be apolitical.
It got to the point where I was like, man, we got a platform, you know. Might as well, voice our opinions, because it affects us.
Right.
We have a decent following, you know. Why not try to, you know, inform these people?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. I mean, it's for the future of the country. For the future of your kids, for the future of everything. And
like, do you think that I've killed a mountain lion in Colorado. I don't think my son will ever have that opportunity.
No.
But I'm going to fight like hell to try to make sure that he can.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's... Yeah.
But look, we're going to smash some birds in the morning. It's been a pleasure having you on, Cable.
Thanks for having me.
It's been great meeting
you,
setting out the lines of the day, man. Yeah. It was a blast. Thanks, Ryan, for cooking for us and hosting us here, man.
Shitting out another badass spot.
Yeah. I was telling Porter, I was like, man, Ryan just keeps shitting out these badass spots one after another.
Well, Ryan's like, oh, man, I got this. And then he's like, oh, dude, I forgot we had this. Oh, dude, by the way, come out here. It's like,
I thought I was going to be staying in a hotel, and then he's like, I got this place I forgot about you. And I'm like,
This is pretty nice, man. Yeah.
Well, I've already texted my wife and said, by the way, I moved out.
Yeah. Henry was like, this place is cool, Dad. Like, way better than a hotel.
Yeah. So yeah. This is it's a cool spot. But no, we got an early morning tomorrow and then going to do some Gators, some Lurcies, some Dove.
Boom.
Yeah.
Sounds like big a good day. Time.
Big couple days ahead. So,
yeah. Well, hell yeah. Thank you, Cable. Y'all need to check out. Plug your stuff real quick before we get off.
Okay. Lone Star Outdoor Show on all social media. And then LoneStarOutdoorShow.com. If you want to check out the podcast, it's on Spotify, iTunes. I go back to iTunes because that was how it was originally.
That was the OG. Yeah.
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
Lone Star Outdoor Show. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking forward to hunting with you guys the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. Looking forward. Thank y'all.